I'm very happy to introduce the speaker for today, who is Luke Kopman. So he did his bachelor in physics and astronomy in the Radboud University in the Netherlands. He did a master in theoretical physics from the Edinburgh University in the UK. And he has just started his fourth year PhD at the Trinity College in Dublin and at the Dublin Institute of Advanced Study in Ireland. He's interested in the simulation and investigation of dynamical quantum unibody systems and their application in quantum computation. And today he's going to tell us about his recent work on controlling marijuana with machine learning. So you can start.
Yeah, thanks, Estelle, very much for the nice introduction. So today I will be talking about controlling marijuana with machine learning, which is based on the work that me and my collaborators and my supervisor, Graham, posted on the archive like a month ago. And I want to start with a little anecdote of how this story started, because last year I was visiting the Vector Institute in Toronto, and I was talking there to Juan and another PhD student, Dee Lu, about my previous work about marijuanas and just over lunch. And then at some point Juan said, like, oh, can't we use machine learning to control or move these marijuanas? And soon we had this project started, and now a year later we have this paper on the archive. And today I will talk about that. Actually, I need to mention one more name is Brian Clark, who is the supervisor of DLU. I will start with a little outline of my talk here today. I will start with some motivation and background of why people are interested in marijuanas and topological quantum computation. Then I will formulate the marijuana control problem as a game, to which advanced machine learning techniques can be applied. And the techniques that we used are the differentiable programming and natural evolutionary strategies. And these techniques actually came up with a very new, interesting strategy, the jump moves jump strategy, which will form the main ingredient for the last part of my presentation. And then in the end, I will wrap everything up and conclude. So starting with the motivation for this work, it comes from the field of quantum technology. As you're all aware of, like the last 30 years or so, people have been interested in these new types of technologies, which are very promising for a very wide range of applications. I've shown here in the top figure just a few examples. And one key ingredient in the development of quantum technologies and quantum computing is the area of quantum control. And our marijuana problem fits within this quantum control area. But more on a general level, quantum control is to do with manipulating quantum systems. For example, here I have depicted or used a block sphere to represent a quantum system, but it could in reality be any quantum system. And then in quantum control, we try to manipulate the quantum information encoded in this with so-called control fields. On an experimental level, you could really think about external magnetic fields or laser pulses. One big challenge to overcome in the development of quantum control and also more general quantum technologies is that these quantum systems are usually very susceptible against noise from the environment. So noisy environment is able to corrupt the quantum system, which is still an enormous challenge. This is also known as decoherence. And especially standard schemes for quantum computation like superconducting qubits, ion traps, called atoms, they suffer a lot from decoherence. And therefore people have started looking for alternative schemes for doing quantum computation. And we focus on one of those alternative schemes, which is topological quantum computation, which was proposed firstly by Kitaev in 2003, or actually already a little bit earlier, but the first time he actually published it was 2003. And topological quantum computation is based on the use of non-abelian anions. And non-abelian anions are specific quasi-particles that live in low-dimensional systems. So they are effective particles. And when you braid those particles or quasi-particles, you get non-abelian braiding statistics. I've shown that here as an example on the right figure, where the blue little dots represent non-abelian anions. And now when you braid them around each other, we get fractional statistics. And what this means is, like, for ordinary fermions and bosons, as you might know, when you exchange them, you get either a plus sign or a minus sign. whereas for these non-abelian anions, you get fractional phases. And the good property about these topological quantum computation and non-abelian anions is that they are encoded non-locally or in the topological degrees of freedom, which means that they are protected from local perturbations or local error sources, which means them very promising for the problem of decoherence. And to actually manipulate quantum computation encoded in such types of systems or topological systems, you need to braid those anions, and the braids correspond then to unitary transformations, which you need for your ordinary quantum circuits that I have drawn here on the left. So in our work, we focus on Majorana zero modes, which is a special type, it's a one particular type of non-abelian anion. And these Majorana zero modes live on the boundaries of one-dimensional P-wave superconductors. And for a long time, people believed that you can't find P-wave superconductors in nature or can't make them in the lab. But then in 2008, there was a huge breakthrough in this area by Fu and Kane, who actually showed that you can create an effective P-wave superconductor by using the so-called superconducting proximity effect. And in this theoretical proposal, they said you can use a topological insulator together with an S-wave superconductor to make an effective P-wave superconductor in which the Majoranas live then on the boundaries. And this was a very big breakthrough because now people could start looking for evidence of Majorana zero modes in the laboratory. And a few years later, actually in 2012 in the Netherlands, in Delft by the Kouwenhove group, people came up with, or people were the first time to measure evidence of the existence of Majorana zero modes, again in these proximity coupled systems. In this case, an S-wave superconducting with a spin orbit coupled nanowire in this case. And for a more recent experimental progress or a review on this, you can look in this Zhang et al. Paper. So for the quantum applications, we of course need to braid now these Majorana zero modes. And there are actually some experimental proposals out there by Alicia in 2011 already to do this braiding by using networks of Majorana wires. So you have here these Majorana wires in which the Majoranas are localized at the edges. And then you can create these kind of network structures and move them around each other by using gate electrodes. We'll see a bit later what I mean by that. But this actually forms the main part of our work because we were interested in moving these Majoranas from one position to another, which you need if you want to braid them. So these first two slides just served as a bit of motivation and overview of why this field is important. And now actually I want to go into more details in which system we study and in which system we can find these Majorana zero modes. And in our case, that is the Kitaev chain, which was...
Excuse me, Luke. Sorry, before you go ahead, I had a question about this Majorana modes that you're using. So is it necessary that the system is one-dimensional? I understand that there's some research into two-dimensional systems as well.
Yes, I said in the beginning, low-dimensional, so that means two and one-dimensional. There's also two-dimensional P plus IP superconductors, which are the two-dimensional version of these P-wave superconductors.
But you don't explore that in your work here?
No, we only focus on the one-dimensional wires, okay. And specifically because these are related to the experiments.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So let me then go on to the actual more microscopic description of the model we use, which is the Kitaev chain as proposed in 2011 by Kitaev. 2001, which is an effective toy model for topological superconductivity. And here the Hamiltonian, I have given the Hamiltonian in equation one, which is a standard tight binding Hamiltonian in which you have a one-dimensional chain and on of lattice sites, and each lattice site can be occupied by a fermion or unoccupied. And the fermions are either created by these fermionic creation and annihilation operators, the C dagger at the position X. And there's now three terms in this Hamiltonian. The first term is the chemical potential. It's a standard term, which is in our case actually shifted by an external potential. We will come back to that later. Then there is a standard hopping term with hopping amplitude W. And then there is this special term which has two creation operators, which is the P-wave superconducting term with the superconducting gap delta. So that's the model we use. Now we want to look for Majorana zero modes, and we can find them by diagonalizing this Hamiltonian. So this, as you might know, this or see, this Hamiltonian is quadratic in the creation and annihilation operators. So you can diagonalize it by doing a so-called Bogoliov-Degen transformation to a quasi-particle picture. And you look for the normal modes of the system. In this case, I've written here in equation two, the diagonalized form of this Hamiltonian with mode energies epsilon n and mode creation operators beta n dagger. And now when we are in the topological phase, which means when mu of x minus v of x is smaller than two w, then we get Majorana zero modes localized at the edges of this model. And we can see that by because we get zero energy modes, which means that the epsilon zero is zero. And we get, they are given here in equation three. These are the creation operators of these zero modes, but these are still direct zero modes, direct fermion, because I haven't gone to a Majorana picture here yet. To get the actual Majorana zero modes out, you still need to expand these direct zero modes into their real and imaginary parts. And the gamma R and the gamma L correspond now to the Majorana operators, which are Hermitian, which you need for Majorana zero modes. So then when you actually solve this and look for the wave function or the mode structure of these Majoranas, you can plot them or you obtain equation four here, which is an exponentially decaying as a function of x, the position, over some decay length xi times some sine wave. And when you then plot them, you get here the bottom figure. So we have the left Majorana localized on the left end of the wire as some exponentially decaying thing. And we have a right Majorana on the right end of the wire as some also decaying into the wire. Now in our work, we want to move those Majoranas, and therefore we need this potential term V of X. And as said earlier, Alicia in 2011 proposed ways to move these Majoranas. And this is based on keyboard potentials. And keyboard potential I've drawn here a schematic of, which here in the bottom are like the little keys of the keyboard. And in experiments, this would correspond to little gate electrodes to which you can apply a voltage to the wire. And in this case, you can create a V of X into your wire. And with applying some voltages, you can basically kick some parts of the wire out of your topological face and then move the Majorana. Here, the Majoranas are drawn as two little blobs, purple blobs, one on the left, gamma L, and one on the right, gamma R. So you can really see that as playing on a keyboard. But in our setup, we smoothen out this, because this keyboard is still discrete, we smoothen out the potential, and we get the smooth potential profile here, V of X, which goes into our Hamiltonian. And then we create effectively this purple potential in the wire, where now we have non-topological regions when the potential is high, and topological regions when the potential is within this topological constraint. So when mu minus Vx is smaller than two omega W. And now we get the Majoranas are localized on the domain boundaries between the topological and non-topological regions. So again, gamma L and gamma R. And the position we denote the left Majorana as X of L and the right Majorana position as X of R. And how we encode this mathematically is here given by equation five, in which we have the height of the potential times two Fermi functions. So these are like step functions to create these kind of structure. And this case is actually time dependent, because we're now going to do is we're going to move the Majorana, so we need to change this potential over time. So that are the potential. Now I can finally go to this Majorana game setup. So imagine now that we have a wire again here with some Majorana on the left and some Majorana on the right. And we have our potential V of X. And we have a little agent here, our machine learning agent. And goal of this agent is to change the potential such that you move the left Majorana from a position x of a to another position x of b. We start at t is equal 0, and then over time, we bring, or the goal is to bring this Majorana to x of b. But one important thing here is that we want to, during this evolution from x of a to x of b, we want to remain the quantum information that we have encoded in these Majoranas. In other words, we want to remain in the ground state. So in the end, we want to end up in the ground state of the Majorana at position x of b. And there is, of course, now different possibilities to move this Majorana from x of a to x of b. And that's, I've shown here some examples on the right, where on the y-axis I plot the Majorana xl of as a function of time. And there's different possibilities, because now you can move this Majorana like the top curve, which is a bit like a wiggly path from a to b, whereas the middle one is a more smooth evolution from a to b. And the bottom one is when the Majorana in the beginning moves a bit slower and more fast towards the end. And the agent now, or the game setting, is that he's going to try different paths and is going to come up with the path that best gives the best results. But for to get the best results, we need a quantitative measure that characterizes how good these paths are. And for this, we do a standard measure used in quantum control theory, which is the infidelity. And the infidelity is defined as 1 minus the fidelity. And 1 minus, which is 1 minus this overlap here. And starting from the right here, psi of A is the ground state of our wire with the Majorana at position x of A. Then we evolve this forward in time with our time-dependent Hamiltonian now, because we are changing the potential profile according to some path. And then in the end, we calculate the overlap with the ground state of the Majorana at the position x of B, which is psi of B. Now, this measure will be 0 when we end up perfectly in the ground state of x of b. But this measure will be 1 when we are orthogonal to it. So that's this is a nice measure to use. And we want to actually minimize this 1 over the different paths to see which is the best path.
Excuse me, Luke, I have a question.
Yeah.
So the right Majorana is not affected when you have a varying potential on the left one, because they're paired, and shouldn't the right one feel that?
That's a very good question. But, in reality, the wires are very long. So we assume that the Majorana on the right is so far away that it is not affected by these movements of the left potential boundary.
And these are electric potentials, so Majorana would have to have some stable magnetic conditions under which you firstly achieve these particles, and then and these are electric potentials. I'm just to understand.
I must admit, I'm not completely an expert on the details of how you would realize this in the laboratory, but it is related to these little gate electrodes here, which can be found in the Alicia paper.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, can I take this opportunity to ask a little question?
Yeah.
So I guess, so we have this quantitative measure that we used, right, like this infidelity. And experimentally, I think this is challenging to measure. Like, is there, or have you thought about maybe coming up with an alternative to the fidelity that is more experimentally friendly?
Oh, that's a very, very good question. In reality, these experiments are not very far yet. So they, as said in the beginning, there's only evidence for Majorana zero modes, which is still even controversial at this current moment of time. And they are not thinking of moving Majoranas at all at the moment. But what I can say is sometimes they bring the left and the right Majorana together to create some effects, which you then can measure. But I'm not really familiar with those kind of things. Other things could be maybe the parity, but this should be preserved under our evolution. So I can't really answer that question.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
But from a computational point of view and control perspective, this infidelity is widely. But the good thing, what we see later in our setup, in our set, we could, our methodology is really easily extended to other kinds of cost functions or measures for the quality of the paths.
Right, thank you.
Any other questions at this point?
Hi. I was wondering, so you talked in the beginning about that you need to do this braiding, right, to get like to map it to like unitary quantum circuits.
Yeah.
So could you do that in this setup? Because then you would have to exchange left and right.
Yeah, therefore, actually, you need in this one wire setup, no, but you really need to make then this kind of T junctions that are shown here, where you have like three separate wires. And then you can bring one to the right, one down, and then one to the.
Oh, right. I see.
But actually, to make a topological qubit, you need also two wires because there are some parity constraints on the Hamiltonian.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, then one important constraint in our setup or game setup is this total time t, and we fix also xa and xb, and we define x of b minus x of a to be the total movement length, which leads to this constraint that the average velocity of the Majorana is fixed. So x of b minus x of a over the total time is L over T is fixed. And this actually, this constraint we found out leads to different kinds of behaviors for the different paths you will get. And related to this, there is some interesting model parameters that I want to introduce before I go on, which were, before we did this work, were already known and were very guided in when people try to search for these kind of movement paths. And this has to do with the movement of Majoranas in a moving frame, which I will now introduce. And
sorry, I just have one question actually.
Yep.
I'm assuming you don't do this movement adiabatically just for decoherence reasons, I think, right?
Yeah.
It seems intuitive just to do it as slowly as possible, but.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Like you could do it adiabatically, but there are some effects like quasi-particle poisoning, which then corrupt your thing.
And
also there, actually a very important there is then this constraint capital T, because for adiabatic protocols, as we will see later, you need a very large time capital T.
Okay.
For people
It's related to the question I had as well. The field then has to be perturbative, right? For the other part of the pair not to change its own position or look.
What do you mean perturbative?
This field that you're applying to move the left Majorana has to be of small like strength or of perturbative nature. Then it only perturbs.
Oh,
and doesn't kick it out of, you know, for example, the superconducting gap or something.
Yeah, that's exactly when you try to move adiabatically, yeah. But we will see later actually some very interesting strategies for perturbing this, or not perturbing, for changing this external field or this potential profile V of X that are very, very drastic actually, very extreme. These are going way beyond perturbative changes to the system.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, then back to this two important model parameters I want to introduce, which are related to the moving frame of Majorana, motion of Majoranas in the moving frame, which I want to explain now shortly. So now we imagine that we have a wire again, and we start moving both the left Majorana or the left wall and the right wall with the same constant velocity v. And now what the moving frame, what I mean by that is that we're going to look in a frame that moves along with the wire with the same constant velocity V. So if you look in this box, then you will see that the wire is static, whereas in the lab frame, it's moving with a constant velocity v. This is like a schematic thing, but you can also do this on the Hamiltonian, which was first done by Schroyer and also in a different kind of setting by Karsig, almost the same setting, but slightly different. And what you do here is we want to now write down the Schrodinger equation in this moving frame. So we need to have the Hamiltonian in the moving frame. And you can show then that you get this kind of Hamiltonian in equation 7, where this unitary transformation u of t takes you from the lab frame into the moving frame, which is, you can read about it in our paper in the appendix. But in fact, this is actually the translation operator, which takes x to x plus vt, which is time dependent. And now there is an important contribution in this moving frame Hamiltonian, which is this term here, which comes because u of t is time dependent. And this results when we now diagonalize this Hamiltonian and find the mode dispersion, we get equation 8, which is now modified compared to the static frame dispersion relation, because there is this term v times k. When v is 0, we get back the original lab frame Hamiltonian dispersion. But when v is finite, you get this contribution. Now the equation maybe don't say much, but it's useful to look at the plots I made here on the right, in which in the top one I plotted actually this dispersion, epsilon k as a function k of the momentum for different velocities. First, when v is 0, which is the static scenario, we have this blue W dispersion, which has a fixed gap between the lowest positive energy state and the highest negative energy state. As you can see, there is a fixed mode gap. Whereas when we now start moving at the finite velocity v, this potential start to tilt. For the positive energy ones, it start tilt to the left, and for the negative energy modes, it start to tilt to the right. So you get like this kind of tilting effect. And now when we increase the velocity so much that we end up with v is equal to delta, which we define to be the critical velocity, not v, it is actually defined earlier by other people as well. And this is when this dispersion, the gap closes, because you can see here now that the lowest positive energy mode is approaching zero, whereas the lowest negative energy one is approaching also zero. So the gap is basically closed and there's no gapped system anymore, which means for topological systems, when the gap closes, you get a topological phase transition, which is here in the moving frame. And then what this means for the Majoranas is plotted here in the bottom, where I again have plotted now the Majorana mode as a function of position for different velocities, the same ones. And as you can see for the blue one, it's still nicely localized, but if we increase the velocity, we go to the red curve, which is not localized at all anymore because this yellow curve is not decaying as a function of x. So then one other important model parameter, which is actually related to that question you just asked, or somebody just asked about perturbing the system, which is a so-called resonance frequency or resonance time scale. And this has to do when you start now perturbing the left wall with a certain frequency. So you have like a fluctuation oscillation on the left wall for small oscillations or small amplitudes. This can be approximated perturbatively, and you get things like standard Fermi-Golden rule. You can derive that there is a specific frequency, the resonance frequency, which is equal to the gap when the loss is the maximum. And this resonance frequency or resonance time scale is quite important because it distinguishes between two types of oscillations. One in which you are very fast with respect to this resonance frequency. And when you are very fast, it could be the case, no, not could be the case, this is the case that the system doesn't see the oscillations and you are in the non-adiabatic regime. Whereas if you are very slow with respect to this resonance frequency, you are in this adiabatic regime that that somebody just asked about. And in this adiabatic regime, you have very low accelerations or low oscillations. that you can slowly change your Hamiltonian such that it always follows the ground state. And also an important thing here is that it goes beyond the standard adiabaticity, because it is also super adiabatic due to this concept of the moving frame. And what I mean by that is that you can now slowly bring the system in a constant velocity frame, or moving at a constant velocity, and then slowly decelerate back down to the static frame. So that's the two important parameters. And based on these parameters, what we do in our work, or in the beginning of our work, is we actually divided up the control problem for the Majoranas, so based on this average velocity constraint, into different control regimes, or Majorana motion regimes, which I will explain here in this slide. On the y-axis, I've plotted again the distance that we move over L, and on the x-axis, there is time. And now this capital T here is when we are actually, this is this time, resonance time scale, which is this black dashed line. And then there's two more curves. One is the red line, which is when the average velocity, so this constraint velocity, is equal to the critical velocity. And then there's this blue line, which is V crit over two. And now we distinguish four different regimes. Regime one is the critical regime. And this is when we are on average above the critical velocity. And in here, it's expected that the infidelity rapidly goes to one, or the fidelity goes rapidly to zero, which is a very bad regime to be in from intuition. Then the second regime is an interesting regime, because on average are very close to the critical velocity, but we are not over it. So in the beginning of our study, we were interested in what would happen here. And then there's two more regimes for which we have low velocity in regimes three and four. Regime four is what we describe as the adiabatic regime, when there is enough time. So there is low, you can do slow changes or smooth protocols, like the one here given in as an example. You have like really a smooth path from A to B, in which you slowly change the Hamiltonian. This is regime four, adiabatic regime. And then there is regime three, when we actually have a low average velocity, but we still need to make rapid changes to get from A to B. And now the question we ask is, we want to minimize the infidelity in each regime, one, two, and three, and four, and see what kind of paths are the best to do in each of them. Now, I can now finally move on to the methods. I have no clue what I'm doing in time, but I will just move on. The methods we use are two machine learning techniques, or officially I shouldn't have called them that, but it is differentiable programming, which I have summarized here as a programming paradigm to efficiently, because you can use backpropagation, obtain numerically exact gradients of complete computer programs. Now a bit more in detail, what I mean by this is that as you probably, or some of you might be aware of from computer science, that any computer program can be represented as a computational graph, which I've given here on the right an example of, in which any computer program can be seen as just some input and then a series of computations or functions acted on this input, which maps your input to the output. And each of these nodes here are in the language of differentiable programming known as primitives. And now you can use the derivatives of these individual primitives in the forward pass and the backward pass to combine them in the chain rule to efficiently obtain the total derivative of the output with respect to the input. And this is applicable to any differentiable computer program. You can find more about this here in this paper by Liao et al., who did it in the context of tensor networks in 2019. Then in our context, we have our infidelity, which is just a series or a composition of functions of our input, which is the path of the Majorana. And I want to pause here a bit, because it's important to note that this is not a trivial calculation at all, because here we really look at the many-body infidelity. although the system is quadratic, it involves quite some steps to compute this chi, which is given in appendix in our paper. But things we, for example, need is an eigensolver and the determinant, because we make use of a special formula known as Onishi formula to calculate the final overlap. So this is a non-trivial calculation. And the derivative that we are interested in is the derivative of the infidelity with respect to this input or the control, which is the position of the Majorana. And to do this with differentiable programming, we actually used a very nice library, the JAX library, which is written in Python for automatic differentiation, which automatically computes all the different derivatives in the forward and backward paths of the individual primitives, and then assembles them in the chain rule to get the whole total derivative. And then afterwards, we can use this derivative, of course, in standard upstate schemes, like, for example, gradient descent is one of them which we used. One of the advantages of this method is that it's highly flexible and can be applied to any computer program that consists of differentiable operations. So also, as people that study machine learning probably know, that our neural networks themselves are also differentiable. You can compute the derivative of them. And in this allowed us to represent the path of the Majorana actually by a neural network. I think some example here on the bottom. And in this neural network, the input is just simply a bunch of different times, and then it puts out the path of the Majorana. And then we were able to train the neural network. Okay, that was the first method. Then the second method is the natural evolutionary strategies, which is a black box optimization method inspired by natural evolution. And natural evolution stems from, of course, from the field of biology. And let me quickly explain what that means there. In this field, they usually talk about generations, and each generation consists of a certain population, and individual members in this population mutate. And then the mutations are evaluated or tested according to some cost function, the fitness function. So there's some function that determines how fit each mutation of the individuals is. And then only the members that are the fittest will survive. So and will survive, that means they go to the next generation. And then when you repeat this process again of mutations and evaluating the fitness, you can repeat that many times. You will end up with a population which has a very high expectation for the fitness function. In our context, how that works is we draw the parameters for our path, Majorana, path XL of T, from a Gaussian distribution. The reason we choose a Gaussian distribution is that this has some nice properties when we want to update the distribution. Because in this method now, we're going to update the whole distribution instead of the individual paths. And the way that works is schematically shown here on the right. This is very high level explanation here. But if you want to look more into detail, you can really read those papers, which are very nice. But the way it works is here in step one, we have this like Gaussian distribution, and we assume for the moment that the optimum is here. And now we're going to shift the mean towards this optimum. So in step two, we are here at the optimum. And in the next step, actually, we also want to bring down the variance very close to this optimum, such that when we now draw parameters from this distribution, or when we draw paths from the Majorana from this distribution, we get a very high, very good cost function, a very low cost function. And the advantage of these methods is that it allows us to optimize our cost function, the infidelity, without knowing the exact gradient of the infidelity itself. Because nowhere in this process we use the infidelity or the gradient of the infidelity. And it's also very efficient or high, because it's highly parallelizable, because the evaluation of each individual path can be done in parallel. And then they can be all combined to update the distribution. So that were the methods. Now I will finally go to the results, which is the most interesting part, to see what happened actually, what the machine came up with. Just for a simple, or a, not simple, just a very quick reminder of what the regimes are. Regime one is the critical regime. Regime two, we defined as to be the subcritical regime, so very close to the critical velocity. And regime three was the low velocity, short time regime, and regime four was the long time or adiabatic regime.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
So how did you define your fitness function in this case? And how did you define that optimal point?
Okay, so this is really like a high level picture, because of course we don't know what the optimum is. So this is just to explain how it roughly works. We assume that we, not assume, we know that we walk into direction of the natural gradient so that we're gonna approach the optimum. And the fitness function that we actually use is the infidelity in our case. So we have a path, and then the infidelity is a measure for how fit our path is. This is like really an analogy from biology. Is that okay?
So I mean, I'm trying to understand. So you use the infidelity. So when you say optimize the distribution, what do you do exactly?
Like the Gaussian distribution is parameterized by some mean and variance.
Yeah.
And then we really optimize. We take gradient descent step actually on this mean and or on this distribution.
Okay. I see. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Other questions about the methods or no? Then let me go to the results. So we have the four regimes again, which I just explained. But let me show the results that the differentiable programming and the natural evolutionary strategies came up with, which is shown here in this little subplot, where on the y-axis is again the position of the Majorana as a function of time t on the x-axis. And in the inset, I have shown here, we have shown, this is a figure from the paper, the infidelity values that you get for this type of strategies. Now, let me see, let us see what's happened here, because this looks quite drastic, actually. As I said earlier, we get some very drastic behavior, because this is how you now change your potential profile, or the X of L of the potential profile. And you see here in regime one, there is first this large spike, which actually consists of a very rapid forward movement followed by a very rapid backward movement. And we, the name we came up with for this is like a jump, and actually a dress jump, as we see later. And then after this spike, there is a large time for which we move at nearly constant velocity, or on average, when you like smooth this out, you get like a nearly average constant velocity. And then in the end, you slowly move backward again. And then basically in the end, you very rapidly jump to your final target position, which is very counterintuitive, because what we discussed amongst themselves, but I want to highlight here as well, this is very strange, because you want to move from a position X of A to a position X of B, and then moving backwards is very, very strange thing to do for a human at least. But we need to keep in mind here that along this process, we want to minimize this infidelity. And apparently this is what the machine came up with, the best thing to do in that case. And actually this, what you're wondering is this red dotted line is actually the critical velocity, when the average velocity is equal to the critical velocity. And as you see in regime one, we actually on average above the critical velocity. For the natural evolutionary strategies, we get similar results, like again, this huge spike and this kind of backward forward thing in the end. But the results are slightly better actually. But this is very, is dressed to a very high degree with very rapid oscillations on top of this more constant structure. But again, if you smooth this out, you will see that this on average here in the middle, you're moving quite constantly. But the interesting thing is, which is still actually an open question, is the function of these rapid oscillations, which slightly improved the infidelity, but we not really, still really don't have a reason why that is the case. Now in the other regimes, 2 and 3, we get similar behavior, which are again for very short times. So that might be this case why these are similar results, which we have this spike in the beginning and some constant velocity bit in the middle, spike in the end. And then especially nice, very nice protocol in regime 3 here with very nice, where you can really see this forward backward thing. And then in regime 4, which is the adiabatic regime, we get completely different behavior, which is as expected from the discussion earlier. We are in a very long time regime, so we expect adiabatic protocols, which are smooth protocols. And here we get really a smooth change. And actually, when you would plot the velocity of this thing, you really move to some finite constant velocity, like moving frame thing, and then decelerate that down to zero. And these are in line with previous studies of these types of protocols. So, to actually benchmark these machine learning results to make sure that they're actually not something crap or unreasonable, we also performed some simulated annealing simulations or optimizations. And for the simulated annealing, we get qualitatively similar results, a little bit less fidelity, but that's also because this simulated annealing method is actually very costly. To run these results for the simulated annealing, we needed to evaluate the infidelity function about 100,000 times, whereas for differentiable programming, we needed only like between 300 and 400 times, which is completely orders of magnitude away. So it's way more efficient, these machine learning methods actually. But the results are qualitatively the same because we get this forward, backward, roughly constant bit in the middle and then backward forward in the end. So now in the remainder of my part of my talk, I want to focus on this like new kind of behavior in regimes 1, 2, and 3. Why I actually say new is because first of all, these things haven't been really studied in the literature, except for one study that looked at a very a simplified version of this model and came up also with completely different results than these results, because there they had like bang-bang protocols, which are something standard in optimal control theory. But that doesn't apply to our system because we really model here the potential profile and changing the potential profile, which is nonlinear. And therefore, we already expected that we would get kind of new behaviors. But now in the remainder, I want to focus on this new behavior, which is I'm going to use these features in regimes 1, 2, and 3. So this rapid forward thing and the constant thing as starting point for our analysis. So we combined these features in a new simple model, the jump move jump strategy, which is this inspired by the machine learning results, which I've drawn here on the right, where we have the XL again on the Y-axis and the T on the X-axis. And here in this protocol, what we do, we first have an instantaneous jump forward with a size delta X forward, and then we move backward for some time with some size delta X back. In the middle, there is a constant velocity part, then we move backward and jump forward to at the end again. And this like little strategy, jump move strategy, is very useful for analysis. We came up with some theoretical understanding for this protocol, which I will now go into. But to make it even, in this analysis, we distinguish two types of this, subtypes of this protocol. One of them is the bare jump move jump strategy. And what we mean by that is when the backward motions are zero. So that's how I've drawn here in the bottom, in which we now have backward motions. And we have a forward, just an instantaneous forward jump and the constant velocity thing. And then in the last part, I really focus on this dress jump move jump strategy, in which we on top of this bare thing, we also have these little backward motions to see what the effect of that is. So for the bare jump move jump strategy in the paper, we show that we can write the infidelity for this strategy by looking into the moving frame again or projecting into the moving frame as actually a maximization problem of two different contributions, because we can write it as 1 minus O delta squared times O V squared, and we want to maximize this product. And these contributions, where do they come from? The O delta is actually from this boundary or from this beginning jumps, the forward jumps. So let me show you the equation. So these are like the O delta is the overlap of the Majorana at the position X of L plus the overlap with the Majorana at the position X of L shifted by an amount delta. And we found that this roughly scales as minus delta squared over S squared, or the Gaussian of delta squared, where S is actually a fitting parameter that we used. The next thing, the next contribution comes from this middle part at the moving at the velocity V, which we projected into the moving frame. And then we get this term OV, which is actually the overlap of the Majorana at position X of L, the ground state, to project it into the ground state, or taking the overlap with the ground state of a moving frame Hamiltonian with this velocity V, which is equal to this bulk part here. And we found that at roughly scales, this has actually been done, studied a bit in one previous work as well. And we found that this was equal to 1 minus beta times V over delta squared times gamma, where gamma is now this factor coming in from going from the lab frame to the moving frame, this kind of relativistic factor. So the equations maybe again don't say much, but I recommend if you're interested to read the paper. But it is good to actually show what this means in the plot, because that's really important here. Because we want to maximize now the product of O delta times O V. And I've plotted here in this graph the different contributions. The red one is the O V, and the black one is the O delta. And now we want to maximize this product over actually the velocity V of the middle part of the protocol. And we get this blue curve, the blue one here, this blue solid curve. And you see there's really one clear distinct velocity for which there is a maximum, which is the best velocity. And when we now plot on top of this like analysis of ours, the real numerical values, so when we actually plug in this strategy into our algorithm to compute the infidelity, we get this blue stars. And as you can see, for low velocities, our analysis nicely matches up with the actual values, whereas for high velocities, close to the critical velocity, this is normalized by delta, we have some higher penalty kicking in. And we know, we understand this because this factor gamma is actually too strong here, close to the critical velocity. But the important thing is that the values are roughly the same here, and also the maximum velocity at which it occurs is roughly same. So in the next and final slide, I wanna go into a little bit of what these now little backward motions on top of this bare jump, move, jump strategy do. And we found actually something interesting there, which is the last part of our paper as well, in which we numerically analyzed this instantaneous infidelity given here by equation 21, which is 1 minus this overlap here, where phi of t is the state time evolved forward with the protocol, with this protocol, and psi of instantaneous means that we compute the instantaneous ground state of the Hamiltonian moving along this trajectory. And here, actually, we can have two choices. We can do several things. We can evaluate this guy in the lab frame, which is done here, but we can also evaluate it in the moving frame. In the lab frame, we have evaluated this function for different dress, jump, move, jump strategies. So for these strategies as given in the inset, where the red one is just when we move only forward, and the blue one are actually when we now have turned on these little backward motions. And the blue one is actually the optimal one we found. We tested different ones, and then in the end, for which the infidelity at the end is the best, we call it blue. And now in the main figure there, then we see that these bigger jumps in the beginning, or the forward-backward thing, the dress jumps, actually lead to a very high penalty for this quantity at least. But over time, the blue one is becoming better than just only jumping forward. And in the end, we are only interested in the infidelity at the end, in how much quantum information ends up in the ground state with the Majorana at position XP. So the last plot here is then when we do the same thing in a moving frame, which is actually a very nice plot in my opinion, because here really we really gained an intuition for what we think is happening with these backward motions. In this case, we used the ground state of the moving frame Hamiltonian, of the Hamiltonian that I showed earlier in the presentation. And here you can now see for the same, we evaluated the same jumps as in this inset. And you see that the blue one, the optimal one, has the lowest infidelity with the moving frame ground state at the velocity v, which is very very interesting, because now it's, we can argue, or we think that, let's choose my word carefully here, we argue that the backward motion now is used to better target the moving frame ground state, because there is a specific backward motion that gives the lowest infidelity with the moving frame ground state. So that's the end of our analysis. Let me wrap up and formulate or summarize what we did. We formulated the Majorana control problem as a game to which we applied machine learning techniques. We applied successfully these methods, differentiable programming and natural evolutionary strategies, and we benchmarked them with simulated annealing. Then we recovered the expected smooth protocols in regime 4 as the one here. We also found a new strategy, jump move jump strategy, in the non-adiabatic regimes 1, 2, and 3 for short times or high velocities. And then we also developed a little theoretical understanding for this strategy by analyzing it in the moving frame. Now for further work, we can look at models even closer to experiments. Like one thing, of course, we can do is looking really at these gate electrodes or these piano key potentials in which the keys are discrete. And another thing is we can include disorder, because in reality, of course, you don't have clean systems. We can include interactions. But the main thing here is that all these effects can be easily included in our methodology, differentiable programming and natural evolutionary strategies very easily. And therefore, I want to end, actually, I started this presentation very broad. I want to end also very broad, because we believe that our results, that actually with these machine learning techniques, we overcame or we gained some intuition in this Majorana control problem. And we believe that therefore we can also use these techniques to overcome other key challenges in the realization of large scale quantum technology. Especially, I use here the word large, or we use the word large, because here we have looked at a many body dynamical system. So I want to end here. Thank you very much. If you want to read, you can find our paper here, and the GitHub, if you want to play with Majoranas, is here as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much. So, do we have questions?
Yeah, can I ask one question? From maybe we've discussed this before, but so do you have any thoughts on how like generic this new protocol is? Like, do you think this can apply to other like control problems and so on, like this jump move jump? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, we briefly discussed that I think before, but we didn't really have an answer. That one thing we discussed was that earlier this year in May, there was another study that looked at spin chains, which has also a special strategy, bang anneal bang, which looks similar to this one, the jump move jump. So it would be interesting to look at if there is like a connection between the two. And that bang anneal bang protocol seems like that it is a general thing. And also, so here the jump move jump, yeah, One thing I can say though is we did a lot of tests of different jump move jump strategies, and they seem to be very robust. So if you slightly change the sizes of the forward and the backward, your infidelity is like very robust. Like it doesn't change much. So there's really like a very really a set of jump move jump protocols that are all very good, which is interesting if you want to apply this in real settings, because there probably you have some errors on what you can do.
Right, thanks.
Do we have other questions? So actually I have a question concerning this instantaneous infidelity. I mean, it looked to me that it's different from the kind of infidelity you were looking before, because now you look at an overlap between the ground state of your marijuana point A and then the ground state of the instantaneous Hamiltonian. So the ground state of the instantaneous Hamiltonian encode information about the other marijuana, right? And so you should somehow have an effect of the relative distance between the other marijuana and your marijuana that you are moving, right? So, I mean, that's the first thing. And also, I'm a little bit confused about this moving reference frame and their relationship with the boundaries, right? Because when everything is static, yeah, I mean, we might say that we don't really care about the boundaries, but I mean, you have a boundary effect when you start like moving both marijuana, right? So first of all, I guess that somehow you assume that those marijuanas are in the bulk, right? Otherwise, I don't see how you're like moving the thing, right? I mean, the concept of having even an infinite chain in the moving reference frame is a bit confusing to me, right? So you need to have like boundaries. Probably they are like somehow in the middle, but you should start feeding them at some point, and there should be an effect on the relative distance between the two marijuanas. So does it show up somehow in the jump, move, jump?
Like one of the effects I explained earlier that the moving frame has is that the marijuanas delocalize in this frame. So one of the effects of moving this thing is that they're gonna be extended. What's your exact question about the jump move jump in that scenario?
So let me imagine an experimental setting, right? So you first of all have marijuanas at the edge, okay? So when you say moving, moving frame, how does it work first when marijuanas at the edge? You have to bring them somehow in the bulk and then start moving the frame, unless I'm getting something wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's also quite an... this moving frame is mainly a theoretical thing, which only works mathematically in the infinite limit. So it's really a theoretical tool to look at these kind of systems when you're moving at a constant velocity. And that can approximate when you're moving your marijuana in the insane experiment at a constant velocity v. So in how you would move then is by really changing your potential with a constant velocity. And then of course, yeah, the marijuanas are as in, maybe this figure is better. This one here, this is then the whole wire and the marijuanas are here now here in this part. So then you would move.
I see. So that's the assumption. I see. And then, so the jump move jump, right? So when you look at like the ground state of the instantaneous Hamiltonian, right? Mm-hmm. So somehow, maybe the other marijuana feels the presence of the right marijuana, right? Because in the infidelity now, you are like taking the overlap with this instantaneous ground state. So is it that maybe the backward move is related to the fact that, oh, I feel somebody is close to me or something?
Okay, this is very important, yeah. I hope nobody but it's explained in the paper. But the moving frame concept only makes sense if you, of course, are moving two Majoranas. And here we are looking at moving one Majorana. So here the phi of t is actually when you move both the left Majorana and the right Majorana with this jump, move, jump strategy. So it's like a two-wall scenario. Because you can't really talk about, of course, of a moving frame of one Majorana. Indeed, then you get, like, it looks like the one, the right one is shifted, and then you get a mismatch and a bad overlap. Yeah, you're right, yeah. Does that answer it, or?
Okay, yeah, fine. I just have to think about it. Thanks. Any other question? If no question, I thank Luke again for his very nice talk.